Welcome to the special edition of the Uptime Wind Energy Podcast. I'm your host, Alan Hall, and I'm here with my co-host, Joel Saxham. And we brought along a friend, Lars Benson of AC883. We're still in San Diego, so we're a long way from Canada, where AC883 is based. But Lars is always full of information about what's happening in the wind industry and what's happening on the repair side and the technology side, because he's been involved in wind since the dawn of wind, pretty much. So, Lars, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
So there's a whole bunch of things going on right now. We're at ACP OMS, and we've been together all week. You had a ton of traffic to your booth.
Yeah.
A lot of customers trying to sign up for repairs this season and learn about all the new technology that's going on. You want to just talk to what you're seeing?
Yeah, I'm going to try to do that. Thank you for having me on. We seem to be getting busy. There's a ton of interest for our blade program, which differs clearly from the rest of our good colleagues, the way we're approaching it.
Yeah.
We are building a new website because we have so many offerings now that we need to be more clear in our communication.
Confirmed new website. We just confirmed it.
Confirmed, yeah. And AC83, that name will remain, but it could be just said AC83 wind repair, wind whatever, something. We're going to rebrand that a little bit because it can be a bit confusing.
Okay.
Because we have so many offering in as an ISP part, but also as a new technology provider,
right,
which is the DNA of the company. That's how we started.
Right. So let's talk blade repair real quick. You guys, it's mid-February right now.
Right. Yeah.
Usually when we start to see tenders come out from the big operators or even smaller operators, they come out in November and December if they're on the ball.
Yeah.
Right, if they're on the ball. Because you want to get your blade repair, basically capacity, ready for that next season. Because there's a limited amount of it, capacity in the and in Canada your season's really short, so you're like end of May to mid October maybe.
It's mid May to worst case scenario end of October.
But
people want to have us out of the door end of September if they can.
Yeah. So what it looks like right now? Did you see a lot of tenders come through in the Canadian market?
There's a ton of RFQs out there.
Okay.
But it seems like decisions have not really been made.
Hasn't been made yet.
Some have not. And a bit of a mystery to us why it's dragging out. We know our colleagues have not gotten it either. It's not because we haven't gotten the work.
Yeah.
It simply hasn't been awarded.
Yeah. Which is odd because it's like we're coming on the end of February, so it was really only, 2 months to get ready to get the technicians suited up and booted up and ready to go.
Yeah, normally you can say that technician who is available in June in Canada, we do not want to have him. That's the reason why I don't have a job in June.
So,
that's really fighting for the good resources.
Yep.
We have built our division up a little bit different because the season only is 4 or 5 months.
Yeah.
So we have a combination of Canadian crews. Mm-hmm. It's a little base crew. We have all our management, of course, product management, quality, all the job. We own the project, but we have staff coming in from Europe. With, of course, adequate work permit and all that jazz.
Sure.
They're all GVO trained, and we're only working with our RADA certified manpower companies.
Okay.
So we do the quality control and know exactly what we're getting. That means we have qualified technicians from day one.
Mm-hmm.
Where our good colleagues that has their own employees, they let them go end of November. And then hire them back in May. And 50% not coming back.
Right.
So they're starting up with a carpenter. You have to learn. He's not afraid of heights, so he can work in ropes.
Yeah.
So, I think that's our advantage that we are building. We try to build our teams to the scope we are getting. The flip side of that is we need a little bit more prep time.
Yep.
Because we want to be sure to have the adequate, certificates. We want to have the best of the people. Mm. And we also make sure we get the work permit done. It just takes time. And it's challenging those guys. They're really it's a global thing that they're simply not technicians enough. So if we don't assign them now, they go somewhere else.
Right. Yeah. So these RFQs that are sitting out there, they need to be let soon.
They have to give somebody the job at a certain point.
Yeah.
And that's not only us. I think that's across the industry.
Yeah.
That's my two cents.
Well, because AC883 doesn't do work just in Canada. You're doing it all over North America.
We do it all over North America, but that also get the work permit into the U.S. is not necessarily easier than it is to get into Canada.
Right, that's true.
It's just a processing time, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And you got to get organized. And I know one of the discussions I heard on the floor this week was essentially power loss because you're not sure where your turbine is pointed. And I my first thought was, well, Lars knows.
Yeah.
He's probably one of the few that can actually find out. Because the complaint we're hearing is, well, we're not generating enough power. Is it the wind resource? We had an engineer come up talking about wind resources. Or is it the turbine themselves? And I think it's maybe a combination of both, but we ought to be able to eliminate the pitch angle of the blades and the yaw and point the thing in the right direction. It seems like the simple
thing. You would think.
But it's not easy to do, actually.
Nobody's interesting. Again, I think we spoke about a few times, the new technology, 90% of it is coming from Europe.
Yeah.
Oh, sure it is.
That's the nature of the beast, because that's where the fire started.
Yeah.
So that's how it is, right? And then over here in the ACP, and just the Danish booth on the Hamburg exhibition is bigger than this complete exhibition.
Oh, yeah. In Hamburg, it's other 100-some-odd companies.
110 Danish exhibitors last year.
Yeah.
So just to give a perspective, and there's all new technology coming out.
Yeah.
It's coming out there. There are a few coming out of North America. One of them is here. But I'm just saying that 90% is coming out of Europe. That's just a fact.
Yeah.
And so the whole control philosophy and the accurate alignment of turbines is also coming out of the German world or the Danish world.
Yeah.
The DTU, the number of spin-offs of DTU into the wind industry is crazy, insane.
Yeah. And that ability that AC883 has to go off and look at pitch alignment without touching the turbine, right? Mm-hmm. It's all laser, done with lasers and magic.
Yeah, it's laser. It's,
lasers and magic.
Lasers and magic,
lasers
yeah.
That's the new website?
That's what we do. No, we're kind of back to the saying I started, I think last year, I said the rotor is the motor.
Yeah,
rotor is the motor.
Yep.
And as everybody is talking about gearboxes, all kind of jazz, if a rotor is not aligned, it could be on the pits, it could be on the yaw, whatever. If that's not aligned or you have leading edge erosion, well, then of course the turbine is not performing.
Yep.
And then you can start talking about gearbox. It doesn't really matter. The trouble starts that root cause comes from the rotor.
Yeah.
In 9 out of 10 times.
So that leads into the question about LiDAR.
Yeah.
Because there's more discussions, you read through the magazines, go online, there's a lot of new LiDAR systems that are out there, but you've actually applied LiDAR to some particular OEM turbines that needed help.
Yeah.
They weren't pointed in the right direction. You want to explain how it works?
Because just to briefly touch on the pitch, I talked to some people, it's new technology. No, the system is actually 15 years old in Germany, but it's new here.
Right.
And on the LiDAR system, the cell-based LiDAR, we introduced it in 2014.
Yes.
So it's not new. It's just new here.
Yeah.
It's been in China for the last 10 years.
It's proven.
But even China's ahead of the curve that we are here.
Sure.
So, but also in all fairness, in 2014, I call it a green banana. Might be not 100% developed. Now the banana have, matured to be a yellow banana.
There we go.
It's working now.
Yeah.
I've been through that painful process. So.
And AC83, they don't follow the TRL scale.
No.
Of 0 to 9 technology readiness.
No.
It's how green is the banana.
But I had hair when I started this job. So. So yeah, it's been a learning curve. It's been good. And now we know it's running, been rolled up to more than 200 turbines in Canada.
Oh, wow.
And it turns out that one of the specifics, it works on all stall regulated, pitch regulated, but it seems like the older stall regulated turbines have a trouble in really being well aligned towards the wind. And that's one issue they have. The other, there's a natural, cell transfer function. That means the true wind speed that the LiDAR is measuring 80 meters in front of the turbine. That's the true wind speed. Mm-hmm. It's not the same on the anemometer.
It's actually
it's always hunting the wind, because it registers the wind after it happened. And it's in a not clean airflow.
Dirty back there.
So that's one of the issues. Another issue, it turns out, there was also a steep learning curve, that the stall regulator, once they hit the rated wind speed, they can actually get more alarms. So I can't remember what the alarm code is called, but they get more alarms when they hit the rated wind speed when you're 100% aligned. So what we do above rated wind speed, we actually misalign it 1 or 2 degrees. And then we get less alarms on the turbine and we take the loads off the tower.
Sure.
By misaligning it above wind speed. It's not logic. That was simply by trying it so many times that misalign it 1 or 2 degrees once you get above rated wind speed.
Yeah.
But in the ramping up, you want to align it as precise as we can. Once over, we swing to avoid the overspeed, and then we're misaligning a little bit.
And that's with stall-regulated turbines?
That's stall-regulated turbines, yeah.
Okay, okay.
It's not the same on a piston-regulated, it's just a regular, you know, we want to make sure that we have a accurate angle towards the wind.
Right.
We want to be as close to zero as possible. So in a Lehman's way, you can say we have a better average, because it's all based on average.
Right.
And the same with the anemometer behind, it's also based on average, so the wind vane. Yeah. So we just have a more precise average, because now we have two lasers, plus minus 30 degrees coming out.
Right.
We compare the angles, and that way we get the correct turbine angle.
Yeah. So if you've proven on the technology on the pitch, the stall regulator turbines.
Yeah.
That seems like, and we vetted the thing, it's now a fully ripe banana.
Yeah.
Or does that mean this is going to come into the United States and a lot? Because there's a wind farms. You can just drive around Texas. You can point to the turbines that aren't pointed in the right direction.
That's true.
It's not hard.
I've been to wind farms where literally you can see driving by it as like 30 degrees different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't get it. But people don't do anything. They don't do it. You can see it with your I just driving by.
Yeah,
the anemometer is the worst.
You know that information's back in like the remote operation center too.
Yeah.
Someone's looking at it.
Yeah.
Like, whoa.
So what is that? What does that mean then? Does that mean that the industry as a whole, which is relying on anemometers, which is not a great measurement, and it's in dirty air, and they apply a lot of averaging to it, because they don't want the turbine hunting and pecking all the time, because that just wears and tears on the turbine.
Yeah,
because they don't have something very accurate.
No.
So is the move then to go to something like a LiDAR system, even if it's like one every other turbine or one every five turbines? I've heard some operators talk about that. Is that the move?
Yeah, I think it's a matter of the turbine age and also the PPA you have.
Sure.
Because there's an ROI on it. On the stall that we have seen, it's depending on the PPA,
right?
It's about 3% power.
Whoa.
That's a lot.
3% power for an investment on, I'm just saying, between $15,000 and $20,000. That's all it costs.
Okay,
it takes an hour to install. So it's not a big deal. And you can hardly do that. The problem is to get them into their Wi-Fi system on the turbine.
Sure.
They don't have that.
The data.
So we actually install it. The SIM card in goes straight to Denmark. We don't even need to touch the...
So you're not even touching the
power,
electrical system.
Just need power, that's it.
That's easy.
Yeah,
because I mean that's always a big thing when it comes to control systems or sensors or whatever is cybersecurity with wind turbines. Nobody wants to.
People freak out just on it. If you get access to your internet on the turbine, people start freaking out already there.
Yeah.
So some customers now we are potentially gonna install in US, fingers crossed, this year, on quite a few turbines. So it's coming also on the stall regulated turbines in the US.
Wow.
But Canada has more than 200 installed.
That's amazing. Okay.
But also, I've got to go back to the PPA and the lifetime of the turbines.
Right.
Because we have turbines that get, you know, $100 or more per megawatt.
Yeah.
That's easy to justify.
Right.
Where go down on the spot market in Texas and get $20 per megawatt and the turbine is 16 years old, it's a harder sell.
Well,
business case.
You can
think
about this too. That LiDAR system can go if there's a repower situation or whatever.
Absolutely.
Pop it off, put it on the new one.
Right.
We are on projects now, but what is it called? Repower
IRA.
Yeah.
Yep.
We on already and verified there. So one of our clients got us in there, so they are doing a power upgrade.
Yeah.
And putting a LiDAR on.
Wow.
So it's there. So we are in that ballpark. But there's so much noise on the communication again.
Sure.
Because there's all control systems. They can do better. There's three control systems down there, retrofit controllers, and they claim they can do it.
Yeah.
And I can't say if they can or not. There's a lot of noise on the communication line. But the wind vane is the wind vane.
Right.
So we can't change that.
Yeah.
So that wouldn't solve the other thing. They might have better your algorithms that there's on the controller today, but I can't tell if I don't think they can gain the same. And then you're also back now, we're touching people's turbines, touching people's controllers, and now it's a harder sell all of a sudden. Now there's more to have a say.
Sure, but with any sort of newish technology, I mean, it's just because it's not being deployed as widely as it possibly should. there becomes an opportunity, especially with the repower situation, where you're putting, instead of putting up a 1.5, you're putting up a 2.3 or
2.8.
God forbid a 3. So what else is cooking, Lars? What else you got going?
Well, we have a ton of stuff going with our new partners in the Control. That's a drone company. They hate when I say the drone company, because it's kind of a trained planes and automobiles, because they can, on helicopters or airplanes or drones,
yeah,
whatever. But they can do more than just, you know, taking pictures of blades. It's the most boring thing in the world now. There's more than 20 suppliers. Yeah. So we try to get away from that market.
Yeah, was it? I was talking with Yannick on your team, I think, yesterday, and he said that they saw 14 drone providers respond to an RFQ.
There was an RFQ out for 17 companies. 14 were bidding on the same work.
I didn't know there was that many drone companies.
I didn't know that many.
And it's just a beaten down market, so it's not even interested. But those guys can be working now on doing ultrasonic testing on blades.
Sure, yeah.
So when we are up on the blade, we see a lightning strike. We want to check, what is it? How deep is it going? Mm-hmm. Is it just a scratch? Or is it really doing some damage? We do it ultrasonic, then we can give a more accurate quote to the customer, because now we know what it is.
Instead of having to grind into it.
But right now it could be between $2,500 or $60,000 worth of last year. The same picture. One was literally $2,500, and the next one was $65,000 for the same picture.
Yeah, because once you start opening it up, you have that's a problem with all the blade repair campaigns.
Oh, it's the same.
Hey, bid on these, and you're like, I don't know, it could be 10 to 50 grand.
Yannick spent a month and a half, he couldn't go to Calgary last year. He was sitting month and a half looking through 400 and somewhat
damages.
Yeah. Give me a price on that.
Good job, Yannick.
Thank you. But
he's losing his hair from that.
So
too.
So it's basically a qualified guessing competition.
Yeah.
There's not really any merit to it.
And then when procurement steps in, it's a qualified guessing competition for the lowest price.
Yeah. Then again, so we're not bidding on the same terms. What if one of our competitors say best case scenario? And we have
a realistic.
And we have a European square brain, so we do the worst case scenario. Well, $50,000, $2,500, go with those guys. Everything is done on T&M anyhow. So you also get an extra bill.
Right.
Where we're more realistic, or trying to be more.
You're getting closer to what their budget is actually.
Yeah, we try to get more leveled.
Yeah.
True. Right. And again, it is a qualified guessing competition. But now new technology coming in with that ultrasonic scanning with a drone, flying a drone up on the blade and do ultrasonic scanning. That's cool.
Yeah. That's cool.
They do X-ray of transmission lines, all the splices.
Oh, sure. That's where the failure points are. Yeah.
They have to be on X-rayed. So they're flying with an X-ray with a drone.
Oh, okay.
And they're starting a new project now. We have two drones. Because when you get X-ray in the hospital, there's a backplate.
Yeah.
Right.
So now they're flying two drones, one upside down and one here.
And doing the lines.
And scanning it.
Are they going to bring that to the blade world?
They have it already. No, not the X-ray part.
If you could X-ray blades, because I looked at a project like that about 6 years ago, and we were like, but it's difficult because those have to fly in unison. The base plate cannot move because then it gets blurry.
Yeah.
But if you can figure that out for blades.
I don't know if they, on the blade side, but they're doing a ton of stuff on some transmission lines. They're doing foundations. They're programming foundations.
Yeah, those are big area.
Even develop a system now to blow my mind. So you're flying with a drone in the tower, inside the tower, to check the foundation there. You open the hatches and you fly directly up and do internal inspection of the blades. You're flying the drone
from the ground?
From the ground. You're flying inside the tower with a drone.
I will have to get those guys on the podcast.
I haven't seen that.
So that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
As you know, the AC-8s were based on bringing new technology in, right? So that's right down our DNA. I get totally excited when I see that.
Yeah.
Because... And we have brought, we talked about last time, 27 or 30 companies over from Europe to North America the last 10 years. Yeah. But that's something that triggers me. Yeah. They're not American, they're Canadian, so everyone.
Sure, right.
So yeah, that's what's going on. And that's why we need to be more clear in our communication, because we have so many offerings.
Yeah.
As an ISP with a different approach, and then our optimization, I would call it, and new technologies. So,
and I mean, you guys doing spare parts and stuff too. Like if you need something figured out, you're call ours.
Yeah,
he'll find you brake pads and gear oil and pitch alignment and blade repair.
I'm so happy we have people in the office now helping me out. So
yeah,
we increased our staff to 40%.
Yeah, Shout out to Sydney, the new office manager who keeps these guys in line.
Absolutely.
Was fantastic.
Absolutely. She is amazing. Yeah. This will not be possible at all without her. She's annoyingly organized.
So, Lars, how do people reach AC at A3? Because you're such a wealth of knowledge, and AC at A3 is starting to get really busy, so people got to reach out.
Out. I was about to say our website, but that's going to be renewed, so it's Lars, L-A-R-S, at ac883.com.
There you go. Lars, thanks so much for being on the podcast, and thanks for sharing a booth with us this week at ACP, and we'll see you hopefully in Hamburg.
We will see you in Hamburg September latest.
Absolutely. Okay. Fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.